This is an Up on a Time special presentation. Up on a Time Radio with your host, Dave Merlot.
Welcome, Up on a Time Radio, where we scour the Canadian storytelling landscape. We carry you into the Tale Weaver's Workshop to show you how a story is indeed a well-crafted quilt, a calculated assembly of panels, each made up of ideas, dreams, history, tradition. And stay tuned for more on what storytellers think of quilts. This is part two of the Up on a Time Special Edition, bringing you the sounds of the Storytellers of Canada Conference in Lévis, Quebec. Today you will hear feature-length interviews from honored teller Flora Zaharia.
Nappy would speak to the walls, to the floors, to animate objects and inanimate objects.
And the conference special guest, Robert Sevencrows.
That can change the world. It's a weapon of mass destruction, but we flip it around, it's a weapon of mass construction.
But first, we are going to talk about the newest addition to the SCCC's arsenal of weapons of mass construction, a community radio station. This is Up on a Time Radio, your storyteller's news magazine, on the radio, where storytellers talk about storytelling.
My name is David Hickey, and I'm from Montreal.
The greatest villain of all time?
Snidely Whiplash! The dastardly nemesis of the Mountie there. That guy who... See, I don't even care about who the hero is, because the villain is the star. Snidely Whiplash, with his mustache and his railroad tracks, and the girl who's always in danger.
Hi, I'm Mafan from Réunion Island in Montreal, and this is SC Radio CC.
I'm Selena Eisenberg, and I'm from Montreal. The character that I happen to love the most is Meshka the Kvetch. And she complains all day long. My grandmother complained about her feet being the size of melons, and that's exactly what Meshka the Kvetch had, feet the size of melons. When Meshka complains about her back and how it aches, my grandmother complained about her hands and how they burnt like fire. And Meshka's really a truly sweet woman. And my grandmother was a sweet woman too.
In an effort to make leaps and bounds into the digital age, you heard in the last episode of Up on a Time that the Storytellers of Canada, Conteurs du Canada, are building their presence on social media. You can find them on Facebook and Twitter. But the organization also wants to preserve a not-so-modern technology that is, well, just pretty darn cool. This year, SC Radio CC was unveiled for the members, a community radio station where you can hear great stories 24/7, streaming from the Storytellers of Canada website. And with a portable recording studio and trained radio producers, SC Radio CC can embark upon innovative recording projects and podcasts and live broadcasting opportunities. In addition to the creative uses of sound and voice in their social media campaigns. With SC Radio CC, the organization hopes to expand their efforts to preserve the voices of elder storytellers, build new audiences, and strengthen relations with local guilds and regional storytelling organizations. Who knows, with such a wealth of talented performers, perhaps an SCCC touring live radio roadshow may roll into your town. At this year's conference, the SCCC invited the folks here at Up on a Time Radio to facilitate a workshop. To get the members ready to contribute to their community radio station, the workshop was great fun, telling stories with sound and turning typical radio elements into vocal sonic tapestries like this station promo.
90% of people who've heard us have had sweet dreams. Tune in to...
In fact, this special edition of Up on a Time Radio couldn't have been complete without the contributions of the SC Radio CC team and interviews from their radio room, the on-site recording studio. Soon we will hear from this year's SCCC honored storytelling elder, but first... Robert Sevencrows is a Mi'kmaq Métis teller who has traveled around the world, learning what it means to be a traditional First Nations storyteller in a 21st century world. This is Robert Sevencrows speaking with Danica Lohrer in the radio room at SCCC 2015.
Can you tell me a little bit about the importance of knowing where we are when we tell our stories?
Yeah. Stories, being First Nations, stories describe a territory, and the people telling them talk about their territory. The story is a territory in itself. So as a storyteller, I think it's extremely important that we know the territory of our story. Many storytellers today collect through the written media, and which is fine. But then they have to go and really tear that story apart, find out where it's from. Like I said this morning, if the storyteller knows how tall the character is, what they wear, what the trees look like and everything, the audience will understand it. They will have confidence. They'll be convinced. So for me, knowing the territory of the story, it's natural, because in the oral tradition, each storyteller told his territory. That's all they knew.
What do you think is the weight of what we carry as storytellers?
Ooh. Traditional storytellers are carrying the weight of all those who told before them, behind them. I think storytellers carry a weight. They carry a responsibility, a lot of humility too. When we stand up and tell a story, the story came from somewhere. If we know where it came from, then we have to realize that we're carrying that story and we're carrying everything that came with it. If somebody collects a story from the 1920s that was written in the 1920s, to me as a storyteller, it would be extremely important to know what was happening in the 1920s that made him write that story, he or she. And the story is a social comment or carrying the feelings of somebody of a certain time. So as a storyteller, I think it's our responsibility to understand that, to out of respect for the story, but out of respect for the listener, is to come as well prepared as possible, to have as many tools in our backpack as we can for that story. We don't have to lay them all out, but we have them. We know.
And what do you think is the most important role of story in our culture, in our world today?
Well, story is a lot of things. I work in the prison system of First Nations men. I don't work there as a storyteller. I'm there as a spiritual advisor. But I've had guys that were in the hole, you know, in segregation and going through, and all of a sudden I said, hey, I got an idea. You're chained to the desk there, but do you want me to tell you a story? Stories are healing. In Africa, they have many, the griots have many stories that are medicine stories. And in the First Nations, we have medicine stories too. So I think as a storyteller, we're really in the storytelling performance right now, many, many of us. But that's part of the game. But storytelling is, like I said this morning, we don't tell the story. For me, the ancestors come through me to tell the story. So there's a very great spiritual aspect to the story there. We think that we can soothe children with stories, but if anybody's had the chance to be by a deathbed and tell a story, or in intensive care, or with somebody that's suffering, that is sick, you see how important it is. The story has all its importance there also. You know, we're very privileged. I come to a place like this. Everybody's kind. I sit on a stage. We're catered to. I have the ideal conditions for stories. But it's really important to remember that I've also told them in the Palestinian camps. I've been in the favelas in Brazil. You know, and in the ghettos, in the dumps, places that have been devastated, in war zones with the Côte Saint-Francière. I think the stories have to go there also. People have to hear it. We were in Beirut after Hariri, the president, got assassinated. And they told us that the storytelling festival probably wouldn't go because the Syrian army was in Beirut. And we ended up doing two shows a night because people needed the stories so they could take them elsewhere. So that's what we do as storytellers. We have that responsibility also. You know, we soothe the soul with words.
Do you think that we take a journey when we take people with us through story?
I really hope so. You know, so many people say to me, you really made me travel with your stories. But my only reply is, well, I traveled too. because when I, as a storyteller, I'm telling the, there's a canoe on the river. Well, I know that river. So I'm moving with my story and following it. I think good storytellers or serious storytellers will tell a story differently every time because they enter the journey in a different condition every time also.
And this sort of means that stories are alive.
Oh, yes. Oh, I hope they're alive. A lot of storytellers take their stories from books. So the rhythm that they're telling the story is a literature rhythm with paragraphs, stanzas, semicolon. Not a story's alive. The story, every night or every day you tell it, every hour is going to be different. It's going to work on you differently. You're going to work on it differently. And the story, hopefully, after telling it 10 times, it changed. It grew. It became more in depth. I figured some of my stories I've been telling now for 25, 30 years, now I'm really comfortable with them. They've grown. So, of course, they're alive. They have to be alive. And if they weren't alive, they wouldn't be there anymore.
When you started your session this morning, you started with the drum. And there's something that's so that brings us into such a special place when we have that drum. It's like, for me, I feel it in my heart, in my heartbeat. And do you think that that helps to bring the story to life?
That's my secret weapon, but don't tell anybody.
When you go into places you haven't been before and you begin, do you have to find... Do you have to make the space comfortable for you as well as the listeners?
I just play the drum.
And that's just...
That's it. That's it. It's my way of preparing myself by singing the honor song, and it's always the same honor song. It's my way of focusing myself, and it's giving honor to the ancestors, because if I'm telling traditional stories, it's through them, through me, that they come from them. And I think anywhere... If I have my drum or I can sing before, sit me on a bunch of needles, it'll work. But that's my way of calming myself, and that way people, they sense it too.
And so what have you learned about listening, being a storyteller?
I think listening is probably more important than the telling. I think the silences are probably more important than the words, because we're giving time for the words to do their magic. And as a storyteller, we have to listen. And one of the things we forget to do is listen to ourselves. When we're talking, when we're telling that, is to listen to ourselves and correct ourselves too. We have to listen to ourselves. I don't say just recording listening, but as we're telling, listen to what we're saying. And it's an interesting. I'm talking to you now, but I'm listening to myself. It's almost like half of my brain is saying, listen to yourself so you don't say anything that's too dumb. And if I do, it's going to say to me, whoop, don't go there. I think listening is very, very important, not just as a storyteller, but as a human being.
What do you think the power that story has?
That it can change the world. It may seem like big, but think of it. When we're sitting and telling stories, when we're gathered around a fire telling stories, there'll be very little violence. When we're sitting and telling stories, when we're telling stories about our culture, there'll be very little violence because we're being taught. I saw that in Beirut, 2005. You know, the Syrian army, the AK-47s were in our faces and everything. People came to listen to stories. And at night, we'd put on a red and white bandana and follow the Lebanese people, fight through the military lines so that we could walk around Hariri's tomb. And what I found was every night they would come and hear the stories. It gave them the strength to go out into the street. It was a real lesson in humility, because we were saying, well, we're only storytellers, but we were saying, oh, no, no, no. You have to remember, most revolutions in the world were started by poets. And that's because we have an expression. We can change the world. You go into a Palestinian camp that has nothing, no running water. People have to smuggle in food and that. And you sit down and tell stories, and all the elders come out and everybody sits. We can give them a few minutes grace and a few minutes peace. So I find that storytelling is it's a weapon of mass destruction, but we flip it around. It's a weapon of mass construction. And I think storytelling has that, as song and dance does. But storytelling is more individual. When I tell a story and somebody says, oh yeah, I relate to that, I think we've just changed their world.
I'm Clara Duga, and I belong to Halifax Storytelling Circle. And the reason I want that quilt is because I have been working on a square for at least 7 different years now. And besides that, I learned how to quilt with my mother when I was 10 years old. I want to win the quilt.
Esse radio se se. Esse radio se se.
I'm Mary Gavin from Vancouver, BC. Oh, how I would like to win the quilt. I wish you could see it. This year it's a gorgeous blend of orange and deep muted sunset orange along with a yellow, the yellow you get in the morning sun. You see, when you win the quilt, you get not only the quilt, but a booklet of the stories explaining the motifs on each and every panel. So you get 2 for 1. And as a Scot, I can tell you, it's a damn good bargain.
For the past 14 years, the Storytellers of Canada have been producing full-length albums, preserving the voices of Canadian storytelling elders, those who have committed their lives to building community through the art of storytelling. The 2015 Story Save Honor goes to Manitoba's Flora Zaharia. SC Radio CC producer Ruth Stewart-Verger brought Flora into the radio room to talk about the life of a prairie storyteller and the character towards whom Flora feels most kindred.
Can you tell me how you started telling stories?
Yes, back in my community, I come from Alberta, from the Kainai Nation, which is south, about an hour and a half south of Calgary. It's just directly south of Fort McLeod, and to the other northeast is Lethbridge. South is Cardston. We're in the middle there, and it's a reserve, a community, and title is Kainai. Kainai people, or if you want to use the long one, you know, Kainaskxahkui, that's the land of the many chiefs, and I belong there. I come from there. My parents were farmers, ranchers, and so they're very busy during the summer. And in winter time, people visit each other, and I could hear. Then they spend hours visiting, and they'd be talking about different events, historical events, and finally they go into legends, and where I often heard the word Napi, who is our trickster, and sometimes I identify myself with Napi. And anyhow, we started to, I heard all these stories, and I, you know, some of them were repeated by others. And as I was growing up, I kept those stories in my mind, and I would ask Mom, Mom, could you tell me that story? You know, this story that I heard about this, like the lost children. Could you tell me about it? You used to tell me that the girl was about my age, you know, in the story. And she would say yes, and she would tell me the whole story. And I identified myself with certain members in the story, especially with that girl. So I really liked that story. And so I grew up with stories. And then later on when I started teaching, I started using stories as a teaching tool. Like we have our 7 teachings in our native culture, and talk about them, you know, talk about whether we're teaching kindness or whether we're teaching respect, wisdom, you know, truth, all of those. And that's what I learned. Did you want to hear a legend?
I would love to hear a legend.
I'll tell you about the one I told last night. This one is about the when I went to the residential school. Food was not always what we wanted, and it was not much. It was very little, and we were very hungry all the time. And how do we supplement that? By trying to help in the kitchen, where the old nappy comes into us and encourages us to do steal a little bit of food, you know. So what happened is one Saturday, one of my girlfriends asked me. She said, "Do you want to come? Let's go and work in the kitchen. We'll get some food." I said, "Oh, that'd be good." And I was only 10 years old, so we sat near the door. She said, "The nun always comes and gets little girls to wash the floor in that little pantry, and let's go there." I said, "Okay." So if we're the first ones sitting near the door, then they're the ones that will be sure to go. We beat everybody else. So we sat there patiently. The nun came, and she asked us. As soon as she opened the door, me, sister, wanted to go. So she took us. We went in there, and she gave us our pail half with water, each a brush and rags and soap. And we went in there, and she told us, put all the crocks out in the middle. You wash around really good, push the crocks back, and then you clean this. Make sure to dry the floor well before you push the crocks back, okay? And my girlfriend told me all those crocks are filled with fruit. And so she said, when we finished around, we had pushed them back. So she said, "You pretend to be washing it between at the door and keep your eyes open. To the right side is people coming from the laundry. To the right from the father's dining room. And over here in front of me is the kitchen." So she said, "Just keep your eyes there and make sure nobody, if anybody's coming, just cough." I said, "Okay." And I was scrubbing away there. And in the meantime, she was filling her stockings. What we did, we didn't have pockets. So what we did is we used four garters, one for the very close to the knee, one a bit higher up, making a little pocket in between, you know. Was very handy. So she said, "You sure you have your full garters?" "Yes, I do." Okay, so she filled her her loot, and I didn't know how she was doing it. I was just busy there. I knew it was the first time I was going to do such a thing. And so when I finished, she said, "Okay, I'll wash there too. So you come on over and you watch. You fill up your stockings." Okay. She got rid of the door. She had left all the covers off. So I got to the apricots and the prunes and the dried apples and dried apricots and dried dates were there too, figs, all kinds of fruit. And I got all my cousins, my girlfriends, you know, that I have to share this with. I filled my stockings right around both sides. And I didn't know. That was my first big steal. So I didn't know the method, what I was supposed to do. We finished, and I was all done. I said, "I'm done." Okay. So we just finished wiping up the middle, washing it. And we started going to empty our pails. And by that time, the nuns were coming in. They come and they pick up a dish for their dining room and some for the father's dining room, which was just close by. So everybody was just the younger nuns that were doing this. We were coming in. And my teacher came along and she said, "Oh, Flora, you're the little godmother." I was a godmother a few days before for my baby sister. So I was 10 years old. "The little godmother, what is your godchild's name?" I said, "Stella Marie." "Oh, the heavens, beautiful, beautiful name. Oh, a little godmother's praising me, sending me up to cloud 9. And I was just so happy. I was just so proud of myself. And then we started walking, and all the nuns were coming in, you know, taking a dish, starting away. And then we started walking, I realized that my legs were rubbing and the fruit was there. So I bravely continued walking, and the fruit started falling on the floor. Then I remember my teacher, who had been praising me to sky high, now telling me, tiens, tiens, Miss Shade, tiens, tiens. And then the cook saw that. She came and she shook me. The more she shook me, the more fruit were coming down. And to make it worse, she lifted my dress up and everybody saw my legs, what I had there, all the nuns coming along. And I was just really horrified, you know. And then I didn't know what to do. I was being praised way up there, the ninth heaven, and here I am. That was a horrible experience.
Nappy made you do it.
Nappy came in us, into me, into us, and said, you need to eat, so help yourself.
The tricksters are always the ones.
That's right. Nappy's that way. You know, he got us into trouble many times. Mm. And, of course, he was such a trickster, very cunning in his ways. So you always think that he is doing something good. You forget that he's, pretty wicked at times.
Enables survival, but boy, oh boy, you better be careful.
That's right, yeah.
Hi, I am Peter Langleith Jarvis from Fort St. John, British Columbia, but currently with Tales, the Alberta League Encouraging Storytelling in Edmonton, Alberta. And this is Up on a Time Radio, only on SC Radio CC. And you are asking me why I want to win the quilt? Are you kidding? Have you seen that quilt? Have you seen the figures on it? There are dancing figures. There are insects larger than our head. It is fascinating. And the colors particularly are all warm colors. Why do I desire? It's not so much I desire the quilt, beautiful and enticing as it is, but I desire to think of what sort of warmth that quilt would bring me should I have the good fortune to win the thing.
So what is this mysterious quilt that has SCCC members so excited? Every year, members are given an opportunity to contribute a cloth panel that depicts a story. Then these panels are delivered to Wainwright, Alberta, to Pearl Ann Gooding, the quilter extraordinaire. And there you have it, a story quilt to be raffled off at each conference. And the winner this year is Ruth Stewart Verger. The gods may have been on her side on this one, because here is what she said when asked why she wanted to win this year's quilt.
I am Ruth Stewart Verger from Ottawa. Every single year I bring my money, I buy my tickets, I fill out my name, cross my fingers, my toes, my eyes, and my nostrils, because that quilt is made by friends, people I've known for years, people who have put their wishes, their dreams, their hopes, their aspirations into stitching. And they've stitched that into a quilt that becomes a community. Can you imagine being at home 6 months from now, wrapping yourself in your community, in the art of your friends? I want that quilt.
We have run out of time. Hope you enjoyed this edition of your Storytellers News magazine on the radio. Incidentally, the folks at SC Radio CC have asked me to mention to you that they are accepting submissions for their Stories for Children rotation. If you would like to know more about this, check out the station page on Facebook, SC Radio CC, and send them a message. And I cannot stress how grateful I am to the whole SC Radio CC team. I hope we can work on many other projects together in the future. This has been Up on a Time Radio, where storytellers talk about storytelling.
You've been listening to an Up on a Time special presentation. Up on a Time is written and produced by Dave Merlot, recorded at Poster Park Productions in Rutherglen, Northern Ontario. Up on a Time Radio is an SC Radio CC production.